Blog Talk Radio. Everybody, this is Merle Exit with Worlds, but that's my website, and this is Whirl with Merle, and I'm here to talk about travel and food and entertainment and kitchen products, all kinds of things there, and also, oh yes, and what bugs you. So if anybody, of course, wants to call in to talk about what bugs you, it would be great to talk about that. My subject for this evening is about my travels to Santa Barbara, California, which I don't know what the weather is out there right now. I'm waiting for my callers to call in, and but here in New York City, it is really cold and disgusting. I had heard that it was so bad that they closed LaGuardia Airport until 7 p.m. That's on my time. So if anybody's planning on coming out here right now, you may well want to stay home. So when I went to Santa Barbara about a couple of weeks ago, and it was really, really great. When I started off, and when I got in, I went to the zoo, and they have a nice zoo there. It's not huge like the Bronx Zoo here in New York City, but it was nice. A lot of birds. As I said, the place has gone to the birds. And I got to feed the giraffes, but I didn't have the opportunity to return at one point because I understand that they have a fox that's tame. Yeah. They have a fox, like a domesticated, and you can pet it and hold it and whatever. If you see on my my little photo there, you could see that I'm holding something in my arms. It's a three-month-old lion cub, and I was able to do that when I was in South Africa, and that was like maybe 3-4 years ago. So that was really cool, and so that's why I did want to get a photo with the fox, but busy, and didn't get to return. What I did do there, oh, this was really cool. Talk about food. Okay, I met Chef Laurence Huben, and she does a cooking class. Normally, she does a cooking class at a winery. And there were two events that I was able to do with her. One of them was that Thursday evening. Apparently, there was a group of about 75 people from NBC Universal Studios. I guess they were all execs. And they were doing a whole, I guess, weekend of trying to get everybody to sort of bond, you know, so get out the cliques. I mean, as in, you know, group cliques. And so they wanted to have a foray, which is something that Chef Laurence does. And so what they did is they decided to have the foray inside of the hotel that they were staying at. And so Chef Laurence brought various fruits and vegetables from the farmer's market and kind of laid them out on a table and first talked about what all the fruits and vegetables were. She also gave a demonstration of how to put chocolate on leaves and a couple of other things. And then what they did was to have the people split up into, I believe it was like 7 groups. And each of the groups went to a table and they took stuff from the fruits and vegetables, whatever they wanted to use to make a salad. And they had a competition. And they had about a half an hour to come up with a salad. And I was one of the judges. And then they had dinner. And after dinner, they had a demonstration and talk about wine and cheese. And I think there was some kind of a little contest to see whether you can identify the wines or the cheeses. So that was quite an interesting. It was an interesting idea if you think about. You know, what can you do when you're having a whole big group of people, you know, and that's going away, and you want to come up with, you know, some ideas of different things. A lot of times, like mystery, murder mystery is always great. But this is, everybody seems to be into, like Top Chef stuff and, you know, things like that. And so this one, you know, doing a kind of a competition was a pretty good idea. And then what happened was that on Saturday morning, Chef Laurence had the foray, which I met with her, and there were 2 other people participating, and we met down at the harbor where they had this guy who had just caught shellfish. I guess that's his thing to do. And I believe it's like he does this like very early in the morning on Saturday. I'm not sure about Sunday. And so you can buy directly from him. Then he has... They're spiny lobsters, which differ, by the way, from a Maine lobster in that there's no claws, but there's a long, you know, big tail. So this way, if you're definitely into having a piece of tail, that's probably the best that you'll get. I found when it was cooked, I found it really tasty, but I'll tell you later, like how, you know, this whole thing about the cooking. What we did is from that point, then we went to the farmer's market, and I'm jealous. I have to tell you, I'm so jealous of all the things, all those fresh fruits and vegetables at the market, and they're all like locally grown. And even there were, even beside the fruits and vegetables, they even had, for instance, they had pistachios that are grown up there, and I was able to, I got the pistachios, and they're from the Santa Barbara Pistachio Company, and they're really the best I've ever had, and it was really great, and they even make a mix. Now, talk about a trail mix. This trail mix, beside, of course, pistachios, has raisins, cranberries, and dried cherries, too. So that really makes for a nice mix. And if you want to get in touch with them, they're at Santa Barbara Pistachio Company, and probably, I'll just Google them, probably... it'll probably come like SantaBarbaraPistachios.com. There was also another company there. This is something I never thought about, that getting olive oil from California. And there was the Santa Barbara Olive Company. And I haven't tried the olive oil yet. Again, I'm hoping all these people are going to call in to chat with me. But I understand that they've gone into competition and won over many of the Italian and Greek olive oils. Then there was a company that sells walnut oil, which was also quite an interesting thing to see. Persimmons, that's the thing that I had never had a persimmon before. No, really, really, I never had a persimmon before. You don't believe me. Okay. But I didn't. And as a matter of fact, what's his name? Bill Gentry, who's also supposed to call it, said he's going to send me some persimmons. He's going to pick them from a tree and send them off to me. And I did get an email saying so. So I'm awaiting for that. What then came about was that after we got all the stuff from the farmer's market, then we went to Chef Laurence's home and cooked. But we all participated in the creating each of the dishes. And so we had things like there was an appetizer of persimmon salsa, which was wonderful. And then we had a salad, and then there was I'm not sure, some kind of a pastry thing that was we stuffed with the goat cheese that had some seasonings that we put into that. We had the duck breast, and of course we had the lobster. And this was interesting with the lobster. The lobster was put into the pot, and Laurence added some, like, when I say seasonings, in other words, like, since we purchased, let's say, leeks, you know, somebody had to take a leek, and we used the tops of the leek and threw that into the pot. I forgot, like, what else there was. So it was like we were using some herbs and spices that, nothing really compelling, but the lobster, I mean, didn't taste like there was, you know, you didn't taste lobster and onions kind of thing. Did get a flavor to the lobster, and I, maybe because of the way it was cooked, I'm not sure, but I had found it to be tastier than the Maine lobster. Now, I did go to a place that had the crabs. I got crabs while I was there. And there they had a spiny crab. Then they had the rock crab. The spiny crab, I guess my feeling is that unless you get a large one, it's more difficult to pick out the meat. The rock lobster is a lot better in terms of picking in the meat, but I personally find that the best crab is the Dungeness crab, which has definitely the most meat and not very salty either. We just like did all these things and dessert, and it was just absolutely, it was great to do this. And then and taste this afterwards. And what made it interesting was that each of the portions weren't large, but they were so tasty and savory that you didn't need a lot. You didn't need a large portion to get that whole sensation of all the flavors in your mouth, which is probably why, you know, you didn't have to wolf it down. And it was great. And I think her website, I believe, is 4ay.com. But you could just Google. that's a great thing. That's a great thing about Google. Let's see. Let me see if I can find her website. I'll tell you. Let's see. Okay, here we are. Okay, it's www.marketforays.com. That's market, FORAYS.com. And you'll be able to get some information when you go out there. I know you're going to want to go out there. I know just from talking to you all about this that you're going to be running. I got you running. I see you out there. I see you ready. You're leaving your house right now. I know. I understand. Okay, so that was just one of the things I did in regards to that's just the food part with that part, but that's not the only other food parts I did. I went on a Segway. Now, how to explain this? If you've never been on a Segway, I have to say it's a difficult thing to explain. It's an upright scooter, and it's actually your weight, not how much you weigh, but your weight that makes it go back or forth. And so you're holding onto these handles, and if you move your body forward, moving your weight forward, it goes forward, and the more forward you go, the faster it goes. And you can go up to a really fast 12 miles an hour. But when you use it, it's not, you can't use it on, can't go on the streets with it. You have to you can do the sidewalks. And in this case, I just calmly went on a bicycle path because I wasn't too sure about this. But I must say, the guy, his name is Jerry Mahoney, who, by the way, is not paired off with Knucklehead Smith. Jerry Mahoney is one of the owners of the Segway of Santa Barbara. And I believe Bill Gentry, the guy sending me the persimmons, he works there as well. And so it was Jerry who gave me all the lessons, including how to get on and how to get off. And let's see who we have. Who do we have? Who's finally calling in?
This is Craig McKellen, Merle.
Oh, hi, Craig.
From Santa Barbara Olive Company.
Oh, yes. So tell us. I already mentioned about the finding the olive oil, and it's competition against Greece
I guess you could say it's a friendly competition, but in our eyes, that would be the producers here in California. We've always known and know today that our products are second to none. They really are second to none, and we always respect, of course, our forefathers in the world of gastronomy, which would be the Europeans, of course, who brought everything here and sort of taught us all about olives and wine and cheese, and you know, we brought it here, the people that settled our country, but we brought it from all those continents that had been doing it for centuries and some even thousands of years in the case of olive oil. But having said that, our olive oil here in California, because of our climate, our soil, and just, you know, all the things, the water that we have a very temperate climate, obviously, and we have been able in the last 50, 60 years to cultivate and produce some of the finest fruits, vegetables, you know, produce, meats, cheeses. And when it comes to olive oil, of which I'm making right now as we speak, it's kind of ironic that we're talking about it because I'm pressing oil. I'm looking through my office window into my production plant, and they're pressing oil as we speak. So if I had a camera, unfortunately this is radio, but
right.
I'm looking through a window, and we're dropping. Today we're doing Mission Olives and Manzanillo. Those are two different types of cultivars that we have. And they're going into a hopper, and they're being pressed, and it takes a little while. It's about an hour and a half process from end to end, maybe even 2 hours. But they go in, you know, with leaves and stems in the hopper. It separates them. They get crushed. It makes a pulp. The machine makes a pulp out of them, and then it moves the pulp along and takes it into a pressing mechanism. And the pressing mechanism hydraulically pushes down on the pulp and squeezes the oil out of it, and, of course, water and solids come out of that. And then it transfers into a centrifuge where it spins, you know, at a high rate of speed, and that separates the viscosity, and then it slowly decants out into a screen above a barrel to catch any, you know, sediment, this delicious golden olive oil. And I tell you, I've had many people here from around the world and sent our oils everywhere. And all of them agree that it's as fine as the finest Tuscan, you know, small village-produced extra virgin olive oil. It's that good. It really is that good.
Well, I have a couple of questions. Like, for instance, when you're making olive oil, are they all green olives?
No. Let me educate
you
and also everybody. Okay,
yeah.
Let me educate you briefly and try and be as, you know, I'll make this in a as brief a statement as possible. First of all olives are green.
Okay.
They all turn black and then they all shrivel and fall off of the tree. There is no black olive tree or green olive tree. So first of all, we have to know that. Olive oil can be pressed from the greenest olives. It can also be pressed from any stage after that. Red, ripe, is the next stage, then black, and then sort of a shriveled black where the olive is aging on the tree and beginning to prepare for falling off the tree because it's dying. In any of those stages, olive oil can be made. Ideally, somewhere between red, ripe, and black, for us anyway, that's the stage that we press because, first of all, there's a higher yield of oil in that olive. It's a more mature piece of fruit. Obviously, a green olive is an immature, unripened piece of fruit. When it turns black, it's ripe. So we like to pick it between red, ripe, and black. It gives a buttery, golden hue to the color of the olive oil. You still get a little bit of the herbaceous, green, peppery kind of a feel to it, but not too hot. And it has a long finish on it, and it's a little softer than if you were to press green fruit, which many people like the green fruit. If you press it green, you're going to get a much hotter, bitter, a lot more pepper on the back of the throat.
Oh, so that's what sometimes when I taste olive oil, I feel like there's like a peppery thing and I can't figure out why.
Well, a lot of olive oils, even black, red, ripe, and black fruit will give you the finish, the peppery finish, if they're, you know, cold pressed and done in the method that we all do here in California. I mean, there's nobody in California that I know that uses heat or solvent or anything like that. We're pretty tried and true, you know, mechanically pressing oil, but we do it either hydraulically or we do it through a bladder press or a wine press. But all those methods are methods that are they're non-invasive when, you know, when it comes to heat or solvent.
Okay.
So we don't use any heat. We don't use any solvents. We do it the old world method, like most, you know, Europeans do. I mean, believe it or not, there aren't a lot of producers who cheat or are unscrupulous. I mean, I visited a lot of people all over the world, and pretty much we all do it the same.
So let me ask you, like, a couple of questions. So, like, let's say now you've pressed the oil out of the olive. Can you still use the olive?
What happens is that the oil is pressed, and out of the press itself, very compacted, comes what we call a cake, olive cake, or, you know, it's the must. It's what's left over. It's dry because it's been pressed. All the liquid any liquid that's in it has hopefully been pressed out of it. So it's sort of a dry material. To the touch, it feels moist, but it's very dry, meaning that it breaks apart.
Right.
You know, it still has a wet look to it, but it doesn't have a lot of moisture content left in it. That material can be fed to farm animals. Generally speaking, pig feed. It can be mixed with different types of pellets for goats,
so
sheep.
Not, basically, it's not used for, you know, to making tapenade or something.
No, no, no. The
okay.
way you would make a tapenade. Do you want to talk about tapenade?
Yeah. Because now what I want to get into then is that now what when let's say when I'm getting a jar of olives,
yep.
let's say,
mm-hmm.
What has been have the olive are they basically raw or what?
No.
You know.
No.
And then,
no. The way.
Okay.
I just explained. Briefly how you would make olive oil.
Right.
So that is completely different than table olives or jarred or canned olives.
Okay.
You have a completely different property coming out of the olive to give you the oil. You take the same olive in green, red, ripe, or black state, you know, of growth that we talked about, and now you want to make it a table olive. You want to eat it in its state, in the way it looks.
Right.
Well, it has a product in it that nature has provided called glycoside. Glycoside is a bitter sugar in the fruit. Now, for some reason, when this tree, you know, was developed, millennium ago, who knows how long, a thousand
yeah, right.
years ago, the tree never learned how to metamorphose the unedible fruit into edible fruit. And the way to correlate that thinking and sort of give you an idea of what I'm saying, if you look at a peach or a plum or, you know, any stone fruit, nectarine, they all start off small and green, and if you were to bite into them at that stage, they would be extremely bitter and unedible.
Okay.
All right? And the property inside there is the same property, bitter sugar. But the tree, through the course of the maturity of that fruit, learns to metamorphose the sugar from unedible to edible sugar. And that's why at the end of the growth cycle of a peach, it's sweet. It started off very bitter.
Right.
So did a plum.
Yeah.
So did a plum. So did everything.
Even a persimmon, huh?
Everything
yeah.
starts off that way. Now, well, not everything. But in the case of the olive, unfortunately, no matter what stage you pick it in, you cannot eat the fruit because the sugars have not changed to edible.
Okay.
So what do we do?
Yeah. What do you do?
We take the
sugar. Tell us. What do you do?
we need to draw the sugar out.
Yeah.
There are many ways you can do that. First of all, simply by putting it in water and just changing the water. That will slowly pull out the bitter sugar. And it takes a long time. It takes several months to do it that way. That's one method. Another method is to make a solution out of lye. Now, I don't know if we all remember what lye is, but lye is the residual property of wood ash. It's typically oak. The white ash that comes from burning wood that's left over when caked, you know, smashed together with a little bit of water, that's lye.
Right.
That's how we used to make our soap in the old days. And what it is, it's an extremely astringent material, meaning put it on your skin and it'll draw all of the impurities out. Or if you put it in clothing with dirt, it'll pull the impurities out of the cotton. That's how you clean.
Right.
Well, you use the same thinking with olives. You put a strong solution in water, and you throw the olives in, and it sucks the sugars out quickly. And so that's the fastest way to cure is with lye. And then once you suck the material out that you don't want in there with the glycoside, you then take it and transfer it into a barrel with salt and water, and then you brine it for a few weeks, and that's called a Spanish cure, believe it or not. It doesn't come from Spain, if for some reason. I mean, in other words, Spanish cure can be done in Greece, Morocco, Tunisia, Israel, the United States. They still call it Spanish cure. The other style of curing is just using salt and water without lye. We refer to that as brine cured, or it's also called Sicilian cure.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, you can refer to it as a natural cure, a brine cure, a salt cure, a Sicilian cure. It all means the same thing. We just use salt and water to pull out. And that's the way I cure here on this farm. I only use salt and water.
Oh, okay.
Now, there's another way to cure. That's using just salt. No liquid. Just salt. Now, that makes the olive shriveled up and pruny. I'm sure you've seen Greek olives, olives. They look like prunes.
Yeah.
That's just taking a black olive off the tree, plump and round and ripe, and you put it in rock salt or just table salt, but we use rock salt here, and you let it sit for a few weeks, and you turn it a little bit, sort of stir it around, and it draws the residual glycoside out of the fruit. There's very little bitter sugars left in a ripe piece of fruit, but still it's inedible. So when it's green, there's a lot of bitter sugar in it. When it's red, there's less. When it's black, there's even less.
You still
can't eat it.
Do we tend to see much? I never think of seeing, red olives.
No, you don't really see them. Sometimes there's a great company out here called Graber. Good people. Make a nice canned olive. It's got that red ripe. It's kind of spotty.
Uh-huh.
It's green, and it has red spots on it. I do the same type of olive. Mine's not as good as theirs. I mean, admittedly, mine is great. I mean, wonderful. People love it. But they've got the corner on the flavor profile on that olive. And if you tasted mine next to theirs, you'd say, oh, yours is delicious and tastes very much like theirs. So, I've done a good job, and I've tried to make a nice green, red ripe canned olive. But, they really have a...
Tell us about some of the products that you have there that you sell.
Well, Santa Barbara Olive Company, 25 years in business. My family...
And your website, by the way, is what?
SBOlive.com or SantaBarbaraOlive.com.
Okay, go ahead.
And you can see if you go on the website, you can see my farm, my family, some of the animals. We raise cows, sheep, goats, pigs, chickens. We have 101 acres. We're right on the coast of Santa Barbara.
Well, cool.
We have 5,000 olive trees and 3 acres of grapes, Chardonnay. We make wine, and we make olives and olive oil, and then we produce all kinds of vegetables and cheeses and meats and butters and things. And we are certified organic. We've been around 25 years, and we make 110 different olive and olive-related products.
Wow.
We even do salsas, pasta sauces. Of course, we do oils. We have...
What would you say is the most unusual product that you have?
For me, it may not sound unusual, but it's a habanero stuffed olive. That means that we take a sweet yet extremely hot habanero pepper.
Right.
Spanish habanero.
Right.
And we stuff that into an olive and then put it in the brine, and it is just, whew. I mean, it really will light the back of your head.
Oh, okay.
Sting the back of your head.
Other than that, any...
Well, for just...
Yeah.
I think
you had something with stuff with feta cheese. Was that?
Well, we have something that not too many producers are doing. We take a real blue cheese, and we stuff that into an olive. It's real cheese, and when you bite into the olive, you taste the cheese, and you know it's blue cheese. And
and
it's just incredible, and it's a flavor experience. We also do a jalapeno jack. We also do a feta. So, and we do a cheddar. So we have a cheddar.
A cheddar, a feta.
We have a cheddar, a feta, a jalapeno jack, and, of course, a blue. Those are the newer, the hip thing in the olive industry. And for years, we've done the standards, which my wife and I didn't invent, but we really popularized, which is garlic stuffed, pepper stuffed. We use a jalapeno pepper.
Right.
Sun-dried tomato stuffed. Chipotle pepper stuffed, and of course onion stuffed, almond stuffed, We also do a mushroom stuffed. So we have a caper stuffed. We have a hazelnut stuffed olive.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, and that's a delicious product. So we tend to do a lot of our olives green with a stuffing in them. We also do a black olive that's whole or pitted or stuffed with a garlic. A black olive, natural stuffed with the garlic, is delicious.
Mm.
They're very limited, so when we run out of them during the course of the year, when they're gone, you know. We have a lot of products at our company that when they're gone, they're gone.
Right. I'm curious about something, because I can't remember the guy's name. Grape seed oil
That's a fairly popular item. I mean, there's people that are doing grape seed oil in Europe and here in California.
That's why I understand that it's grape seed oil is rare to get it in the United States. That it's made in the United States, and I think there was I can't think of the guy who.
I wish I could think of it. If I knew, I'd certainly tell you, because we don't make grape seed oil, but there are some. There are some very good producers of grapeseed oil, and I think it's a very high smoke point oil, which means that it's usable for, you know, for particular needs in gastronomy. So it, you know, it has its place.
Right.
It's not something that I do, but I think it does have its place, and I think it's certainly worthy of it, exploring, investigating.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm awaiting your products to try them out. The whole thing is I'm trying to urge people to buy local, so to speak, because.
I really appreciate that, here's my John Philip Sousa Stump America speech right now. I really believe in this too, and I'm a farmer, and I'm a farmer here in the United States. I believe this, and people should know this. It's certainly okay with me and with any farmer here that we explore all the bounty of the world. You have to do that, and we understand that that's something that we all need to do. But it also makes a lot of sense for those of us in the United States to support those of us like myself who work very hard, get up every day. It's true. There are American farmers, and I'm one of them. And and to support American farmers, and we're not more expensive. I mean, a lot of times my products are much less expensive than the European imports. I compete very, very readily with the European imported prices. And like I said, many, many times we're far less on our olive oil pricing and many other items. We're not gouging. We're very fair on that. And so giving us a chance to prove to our great citizens of our great country that products like olive oil from California and, of course, wine from California and, all the bounty that comes from all the other states. And I don't mean to discount the fact that New York produces some fantastic wines, and Pennsylvania has some fantastic produce, and we're not just because we're California doesn't mean we're the only ones producing great wine and great cheese, and we'll look at Wisconsin and look at the Great Lakes. I mean, there's some, look at the cranberries that come from the United States, and I just say to the people out there, thank you for supporting us for all these years, and please continue to at least give us a shot now and then on the, on the competitive grocery shelf, and pick up American products now and then. Support our country by supporting our farmers.
That's what I say.
Yeah.
Well, it was really nice having you. This is really great to hear about this. Again, your website is SB.
You can go sbolive.com or just simply santabarbaraolive.com. And we'll come up, multiple engines, and we're out there all over the place. You can find us real easily.
Great. It was really great talking to you. And as I said, I await to taste the product.
Hey, give me a call when you, or I'll call you if you want me to, when you get them in there, and I'll answer any questions you have.
Certainly. And everybody listening, You will be also seeing the information. I also write for like 11 publications, and this information will be appearing in the publications as I get them out, and I'll let you know about them.
I appreciate it, Merle. I really thank you very much for having me on.
You're welcome.
Thanks so much for supporting us.
By the way, how's the weather there?
Well, listen, I don't want to make you all feel bad on the East Coast.
Go ahead.
I'm looking out at the sun's going down. There are no clouds in the sky. It's about 68 degrees. It's going to cool off tonight to about 50.
Have a nice night.
It's going to be nice.
All right, I'm pissed. I'll call you when I get the stuff.
All right, Merle. Thanks a lot. Right,
take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, everybody, we're now going to break for commercial.
This program is brought to you by M&S Italian Food Specialists, the official caterers for the crew of Lydia's Family Table, which can be seen on PBS. M&S is located at 34-23 Francis Lewis Boulevard in Bayside, Queens. There, you'll find over 100 different types of cheeses, store-made sausages, fresh meats, as well as great salads and sandwiches. Choose fully cooked items from the deli area, or just tell Joe what you're interested in preparing. M&S carries a full line of imported groceries for all your cooking needs. Call them at 718-353-8318. A family business for over 50 years.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Yeah, no, I didn't have to go pee. I just wanted that's just one of our sponsors. It's but that's here in New York City. So don't try to like run outside right now and go to M&S. They're out here in Queens. That's where I live. Yeah, you know, people ask me if I'm from Queens. I say no, my folks are straight. Get it? Okay. So I want to continue. One of the products that I would like to talk about before I tell you about some of the bugs me. One of the products I wanted to talk about is a product called a Vitamix. This is really, really great kitchen product. It's a type of a blender. But the speed is really extreme. And for dinner just before I threw in a piece of butternut squash, some tomatoes, a little piece of onion, of scallion, the little bottom of the scallion, a thin slice of I'll think of it in a minute. Ginger, okay. A thin slice of ginger and a little bit of salt, milk, water, and maple syrup, pure, real maple syrup. Okay, and I let it go. And in about 5 minutes, you first make sure it's all crushed and whatever, puree it, and then put it on the highest speed, and 5 minutes, it will actually cook everything. It'll cook it, and it comes out just about like boiling hot when you do this. And so this is a great way to make soups. Now, if for instance, let's say you could also add a broth to it, vegetable broth, or you can add chicken broth. Or I did a situation where I did something similar. I mean, not those ingredients. And I had cooked up a chicken breast, and I took the cooked chicken breast and threw that in. And it pulverizes it so much that I mean, you won't even know that there's chicken in there. But the best part about it is that you're having the soup. And your protein is in there. I haven't tried it. I'm going to try it, next with some beef. But again, this is the Vitamix. I mean, I don't know. Just go online and check it out. Now, I also wanted to talk about. Oh, by the way, it is cold here. I'm sitting in my I'm nice warm in my what I call my refrigerator room, my computer room. And I'm wearing a New York Sharks jacket. nice and warm. That's my obsession is the New York Sharks women's tackle football team. Yes, that's right. The women are playing tackle football, and where the New York Sharks are part of the IWFL, Independent Women's Football League. And, well, I've gone ahead and gone as far as assisting in getting the IWFL Football Hall of Fame. Yep, the first Women's Football Hall of Fame. It's in Wichita, Kansas, at the Museum of World Treasures. That's how obsessive that I got with this. And probably maybe on the next show I'm going to have Andrew Douglas, the owner of the New York Sharks, come on and talk about this. And in the meantime, so I was talking about the things that bug you. Now, okay, I mean, it's enough when I have, you know, the callers on the phone, you know, and the chimney ones call, and I usually tell them to shove it up there. Yeah. There's so many, but you can't, you know, say certain things on the phone. Sometimes I put them on hold and let them play Green Sleeves and just let that keep going, and then finally they hang up. But this particular one was a case. Oh, this is UPS. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay. So I have three boxes to send out, and two boxes are going to Pennsylvania. I got all kinds of stuff in there, two boxes going to Pennsylvania to my sister. And the third box I have is a blender that I'm sending out to Minnesota, to a friend of mine in Minnesota. And so I didn't track it. And then what I got is that it had arrived on the 7th, and on the 10th, my sister calls me up and says, and thanks me for the blender. And I said, the blender? And I was trying to figure out how she got the blender. And it's, for some reason or other, UPS decided to drop all three packages at her house. And she said she saw her name on it. I mean, I wish I could have seen the box. Now, I had written on the box, I hand wrote the person who was in Minnesota. So in case, let's say, if the packing slip fell off, they could have seen that. Well, I still don't know what exactly happened, but what was interesting is what they wanted to do. They said, well, we'll pick up the package and bring it to the correct address. So, I mean, can you imagine, like, first I have to say, tell my sister, no, you're not getting the blender. Then at the same time, she probably used it, so I could just see sending a used blender to, you know, my friend in Minnesota, you know, and her calling me and asking me why I'm sending her a used blender. But in terms of the answer of how this all turned out, I am very clear. I kept on getting at UPS with enough phone calls, and I expect them to send me money. I didn't insure it, but it's insured for up to $100, which is perfect, because that's about approximately what the blender cost. And the reason why I'm telling you this, because you... if things like this happen, you know, don't necessarily accept what their story is. I'm sure a lot of you have things that probably bug you. I'd really love to hear them. You know, like you know, with things like even things that happen, things on television. By the way, I also like to watch all my children. By the way, and all my children fans. I thank God the kid finally got the operation for his hearing loss, because I was so tired of having them talk to the deaf child. I mean, you know, they were constantly saying, you know, acknowledging the child is deaf, yet they would, you know, keep talking to it as if it wasn't deaf, and then saying he's deaf. So call it stupidity, but that's a soap opera, huh? So let's see what else I can. But getting back to Santa Barbara, to tell you what else I did in Santa Barbara. That was not just the farmer's market. I also went on a yacht and went on a cruise in the near the harbor. Went out and I got a sunset sail. And then I went up to Solvang, which is I guess it's north of there. And Solvang seems to be like the Danish capital of, I don't know whether it's the California or they say the Danish capital of the United States, but I went up there to Solvang, and I went to the Solvang Bakery and got a whole meso Danish pastry. And let me tell you, let's see, it's www.solvangbakery.com, S-O-L-V-A-N-G, .com. And you can order online. And I have to tell you, I didn't get to compare anything. But the thing about, I love almond paste, so I love things that have almond paste. And they're not skimpy on the almond paste. So I have all types of pastries and buttering and breads. And it's great because it's different. They have some things that are different. I think there was a cheese bread. They have bread that's got cardamom in it. And in the town itself, it's a cute little town. Very, you know, a lot of shops, a lot of restaurants, that kind of place. And it's probably gorgeous right now with all the Christmas stuff that you have there. And also, I'm going to look to see back here in New York. I also went to, because I wanted to briefly tell you about. This place that I went to, Athens Tavern, and not, you know, I don't expect, of course, that you're all going to come to New York City to you know, just to go there. But if you do come to New York City, it's very accessible. Like if you're in Manhattan, to get to the place. But the thing about the place is that the it's Cretan from Crete. It's Cretan. Cuisine, so things like a lot of things from the farmers market and stuff like that. But what's interesting about this is that what they don't have souvlaki, gyro, moussaka, pasticcio, baklava. They'll serve up cured olives and a freshly baked bread made from carrot powder and barley flour. For your opening plate, and one of the things I love, they have I don't know if you've had Greek food, but they make their own taramousalata. That's that thing, the fish roe that's whipped up with the olive oil and whatever. So they don't do it, you know, it's not like from a jar where many places have it. And they'll have food like there's some like a. Tara halloumi mesika, I don't know if I'm pronouncing right, caramelized figs with Cypriot goat cheese. And then they have another item like they have a stuffed onion petals with octopus in a Greek wine reduction. And they have, of course, they have lamb. But it's interesting. They have lamb and they have a lot of fish. But one of the things with the is that they don't have pork. They don't have any pork dishes. They have beef dishes, a lot of fish, just to give anybody information. I wish I could give you the website, but they don't have one. They're in Astoria. That's a section of Queens, Astoria. And it's like Astoria is like the Greek capital of New York. That's where you're going to find all of the Greek restaurants and the whole Greek area. just in case anybody does come to New York, the phone number is 718-267-0800. And you'll absolutely enjoy this place. I'm definitely going to go back at least a few times, at least. So anyway, I also, of course, want to wish everybody happy holidays. I had just, I guess, Hanukkah has just about ended, I guess. I don't know. I try to keep track, you know. Even my own holiday, I tend to not, like, keep track of. Did I light the candles? Did I not light the candles, you know? Of course, Christmas will be coming up, and all that Christmas music that we're going to hear. I don't know what happened to all my callers versus all my children. We have a word from who?
Hello.
Oh, hi, Donald.
Hello. How are you?
Well, we're fine. Did you want to say anything in particular except hello?
No.
Okay. Go into the water and have a good quack, I guess.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. Okay. Perhaps like maybe next time I'll do a few scenes from The Wizard of Oz instead. Again, I want to encourage people to call in and talk to me about what bugs you, or just talk about the subjects that I'm getting on here. I'm not clear what I'm doing next week. I will know probably by tomorrow, so I'll post on my schedule on all the topics. I will choose another place that I've traveled to, and hopefully I can get the people from that area to come on. In the meantime, so I'm going to end the show, and I'm going to end the show with a song that was by the Isaacs. The Isaacs, I-S-A-A-C-S, if you go on, the Isaacs.com, a song that they do called I Feel a Christmas Spirit. So take care and talk to you guys next week.
I can feel the Christmas spirit take a hold of me. I feel the Christmas spirit flowing in the air. There's lots of joy and happiness in the presents that we share. No other day can take its place around my memory. The world is celebrating with friends and family. Thank you.
all are singing, I hear them laughing, pray. Can't you feel the Christmas spirit on this special day?
Well, I feel the Christmas spirit blowing in the air. There's lots of joy and happiness in the